thought the leaden winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
And the colors of the sea find your eyes with trembling mermaids.
Well, this is Tales of Brave Ulysses by Cream. It's a classic song by a classic band, Tim. And we're all sailing on the sea of life. We're on a voyage. We're on a journey, like a white wine mom might say. But it is true. And we're going to go into the deep dive now and talk about those factors.
Yeah, deep dive is my favorite part of the segment, personally. Because this is the time period where I get to show you guys the research that I've
been doing. Tim is extremely analytical.
I'm super analytical. I love doing this stuff. So I like to talk about specific issues that are affecting you at home. And one of the things that we need to talk about today is about housing prices.
Right.
Now, there are mainstream media narratives. There are narratives that even I believed myself, but right. I wanted to challenge my assumptions. Now, there's sayings that like BlackRock, Vanguard, institutionalized investors are buying up all the homes. It's leading the housing prices going up. And I originally led with that, right? But it was lazy of me to not look deeper. So I said,
we've
done
this deep dive before. This is an excellent deep dive.
We've done it. And I wanted to look specifically into what's really happening behind the scenes, because it's never that black and white. There is a gray zone to where we have to focus on. So let's just start out here. You know, if you've tried to buy a house lately, you have felt this. And we can go ahead and pull up number one here with the housing prices. But, you know, before we talk about why the housing is broken, you need to see what normal used to look like. So for most of American history, buying a home was not easy, okay? A normal house used to cost about three times what the household per year made. And then if you worked, if you saved, you could actually get there.
And that was the fact of the American economy is, hey, even if you have a factory job, whatever, especially if you do, you're going to be able to, based on your income, afford a place to live.
Right. Okay. And so you've got the prices rose, but the income did not rise.
Right.
And so now you see the relationship is gone. And if you go back to that chart, starting in the early 2000s, you can kind of see that the prices take off after 2020.
Right.
And then they explode, and then the wages never catch up specifically. Okay.
Wow.
Right. So now we also need to talk about like who's getting pushed out, because it's not equal across all of the age groups. But yeah, if you look at this, 5.8 times price to income ratio. Now it used to be 3.5. 5.8 is a very big jump, and you just see how the wages did not dramatically increase. And we're going to break down so we understand how did we even get to the point where a house cost $433,000.
Right.
So let's talk about the median age first at 1.1, because this is also important. So in the 90s, first-time buyers used to be around 30 years old, okay? Then now they're pushing 38. And just look at the end at 2024. 38 years old is when you're expecting to buy a house. And Rex, think about it this way.
Right.
Remember, like everyone, I was always wondering why 30 was the marker for us specifically, because as the American person or a young person, we're told that like 30 is when you want to start thinking about kids. You want to start thinking about having a house, those types of things. But now we're not able to do that. And so this leads to people needing more time to save. They need more income, and now they need more help from family. And you're seeing an increase in people being dependent on family in order to help them buy this.
Harrison threw this up, and he threw up this image of the real stock market, not asking the crew to be wizards or find it or anything, but he shows it's the number of people that are 30, married, and have their own house. And since the 70s, it's literally like that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. But age alone doesn't just explain the story. The real story shows when you compare the paychecks to the prices, and we can actually see where the prices and the wages split. So let's go up at number two. And this is the one we already covered. We're actually going to go past this, okay? So we're going to look at
1950 to today.
Housing prices and income used to rise together. Then you had 2000, in which they split, never coming back, and then the prices rise faster than the pay. Saving doesn't help. Promotions don't help. Think about promotions too. if you get a promotion or you stay within the same company, you're not getting enough percentage-wise each year to be able to have increased income. Sometimes there are companies, I worked for a company where they were giving 2% raises each year.
Oh.
And that didn't even beat inflation. And I'm sure a lot of you guys back at home experienced that as well, where your employer, rather than paying you to retain you, is like, okay, well, let's just give him a 2% and hope that he stays.
Let's get the robot in here in a couple quarters.
Yeah,
get
so let's go ahead and pull up that graph again, because we can look at the split here. So like we're saying, look at the beginning of this. You're looking at the 1950s through the 1960s, and then you have that split that happens during the 80s. And you just see the trajectory. Those are prediction graphs. This is going to continue, and this is what even a K-shaped economy looks like. So you're looking at this chart here, and we're like, what happened in the 80s? Remember, I talked about this yesterday. 80s was Reaganomics. That is exactly when the inflection point and all of the corporations and all the businesses decided, hey, let's stop paying the employer that's helping us produce actual productivity and increase the productivity. Let's just go back and invest it into the company. Now we also need to talk about the houses themselves, because not all houses are created equal. And you got to look at the average house, what it looked like during the 50s versus now, and it's dramatically different. So houses never just got the houses didn't just get more.
Really quick, we got Harrison's chart up here. This is the 30-year-olds that are married and own a home. Look at that. Look at that. You start up around 50%, and then you go down from 1950 to 2025. We scroll down. Look at that. Lower or about 15 to 10%.
This is a reality for our generation.
It's declined like 500%.
Yes. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going through this experience. There's a lot of millennials that have now reached the 30s where that's the point at which they want to get the house.
Here's the thing, right? Like, we're entitled as American citizens to be able to live in our own country, to be able to afford to raise a family in your own country, to be able to come home from work every day and have it not be a George Soros coffin apartment.
Yes.
Right? And, like, here's the thing. Everyone else, up until the era of the boomer and maybe the Gen X, it got better, it got better, it got better. We are the first generation that's looking at living less long, it's looking at owning less property, having a lower standing of liver, or of liver, lower standard of living. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, no. And you're completely right about that. And people are feeling that on a day-to-day basis. Now, if we're looking at the average housing size, we can look up at number 4.
And that's also shrunk as well.
No. Grown. The house have grown. So we've now demanded more. So look at the 1970s. 1790, the average home used to only be 831 square feet. 2023 and
2200.
And, yeah, 2200. In 2019, the average was about 2500. Now we're coming down in size. The thing that's important here.
Oh, people got a little too big for their britches. Not they had that money, that they had that bread. Spoiler alert, pandemic war.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, okay, there's two things to look at here. You've got the number of people that used to live in a house. So more people used to live in smaller houses, and now you have people with bigger houses with less people living in them.
Sure.
Because people are having smaller
families.
People
used to like sleep together like seals.
Well,
like
not just warmth. That. You're having people actually have less kids now as well.
Absolutely.
So you're going to have less of a household. Now, also we need to look at the amenities, because back in the 70s and the 1950s, you had bigger families. You only had one bathroom typically, and then you had no AC, no garages, none of those things, right? And so now today you have over 2,300 square feet. You've got smaller households of people. You've got multiple bedrooms. You've got central air, garages, things that like you require code to type in and it's the technology. And the reason why I bring this up specifically, guys, is because when you have a bigger house, it means more material is required to build that house, which makes the house more expensive on its own, just from a fundamental perspective.
Yes.
So that is a clear distinction why you're not going to see a house cost the same. It's not all of them. I'm just giving you one angle to understand. And then when the standard for people is it needs to have central cooling, that also means there's a cost that's associated with that. Like central cooling unit costs like $15,000 alone, especially some of these newer models. Mm. So then All of that, when a construction worker or a contractor goes to build a house, they have to take all of that into account of, okay, people are expecting modern amenities, they're expecting these things. We have to bake that into the price of the new home. That way we can actually make money, because no one wants to go into a business.
And we got a ton of these places now around the country that are hyper-regulated to where, like, there's another additional, like in California, I assume there's another six figures minimum if you want to build anything.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Go ahead.
Yes. And just – let's look at the housing construction size on 4.1. Maybe it's is that something that I have up there?
Or am I
off here? Yeah. So over the past few decades, over the past few decades, the average size of the American home has seen significant increase. 1950s, the average home measured about 983, and then it accommodated about 3.37 people per household. And this is the thing that we just covered. But then you're looking at something else, and also it's about not just the houses getting bigger, but also most of the land near the cities that people wanted to live near were not actually fully developed. So, like, let's go back in time and think about what Dallas and Austin used to look like, in the 90s.
Especially Austin. I mean, not even the 90s. I can think about when I was running around in, like, the 2000s or even the early 2010s. You go to an area like Dripping Springs. Let's take Dripping Springs as an example. I used to live out in Dripping Springs for a number of years by Onion Creek. Phenomenal area, great people, my favorite area around Austin. Absolutely love it. But it used to be like a wasteland out there. There's absolutely nothing. And when you go out there now, it's like an airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an airport now to get in there to go past the Y.
Yes.
None of that was there even 5-10 years ago. And when there's no land, when you have these houses get more expensive, they're bigger, there's no backyard, you live in the home.
Yes. And that is part of the story. And the other part that I'm highlighting is when there is no when there aren't as many homes, right, or an area has not been as developed, that means the land is typically cheaper at that time.
Sure.
Okay. So the closer you are to the center of a city, let's take Austin, for example, and you're in the center, it goes out into a ripple effect.
Right.
And so you look at it now, Georgetown, which is the farthest north right now for where civilization is now the new frontier. But it used to be that North Austin, which is only 20 minutes from downtown.
Very true.
Used to be the point at which was the last frontier.
Very true.
So now,
do not go to Leander. Do not check out Leander. Leander is terrible. It's all built up. It's awful. You don't want to go there. It actually is a very nice area.
Right. And then, so the point I'm trying to make here is about not just location, but everybody wants to live near a city and in an urban region. It didn't always used to be the case.
Because there's the amenities and the people.
It's the people. You want to be able to do things. You don't want to live, I'm sorry for anybody who's from Kansas, I lived there for a couple of years. I'm just saying this. Most people don't want to live in the middle of Kansas where there's not as much going on versus one of these bigger metroplexes like a Dallas or an Austin or Nashville.
There's more social and financial mobility.
Right. And then just look at the population alone. You had 150 million people in the 1950s and then over 330 million today. So the population has almost doubled. More than doubled since then.
I love the myth of our census. We don't know. God knows how many people are in the United States of America. It could be 300 million, it could be 400 million. Who knows?
Right. So now what I'm getting at here is this supply and demand issue as well.
Okay.
So you've got on one point, more houses have now been developed in these larger cities because more people wanted to live there.
Right.
And then you also have not as many homes being built to catch up to meet that demand. And also as more people flock, like in 2020, Austin got put on my radar, somebody who didn't live in this region.
Oh, people just started coming here.
Yes.
They started flooding here because of the pandemic and the less restrictions here. And then have to worry about the stuff going on in California and New York. I'm telling you, that was apocalyptic. Seeing all the people come in like 2021, 2023.
Yes.
They found out during COVID.
Right. So as a consequence, more people, bigger population, more demand equals higher prices. This is one aspect. Now let's talk about the starter home, because the starter home has also disappeared specifically.
They used to sell kits where you build a house, Sears catalog.
Yeah. So starter homes used to be how people used to get in. They were simple. They were affordable. And about you can pull up number five here. And in 1982, about 40% of new homes were starter sized. Now in 2023, 9%. It's only 9%.
Wow.
And it's not because people stopped wanting them. It's because zoning blocks small homes, parking rules raise cost and permit freezes don't scale down. And all of those costs hit the construction before the construction even starts. And like I was saying, remember, these construction workers and contractors need to make money on the actual building itself, right? It costs, there are hard costs that go into the house itself. So it's not profitable for them to create a starter home because of the margins now. Okay.
Well, they can make more money. It's just like we see the egg price people, even though they got a consistent supply and they could make the right amount of cash and help people. It's not about helping people. It's all about the bottom line. Yes. That's because of the monopoly problem.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, and there's a bunch of things, right? So we're going to play this thing showing you what it's like in California, showing the permit process. But before we get to that video, I want to explain something, how these prices are already baked in. Because when you look at a house, you've got permits that are needed. You've got fees. There's reviews that happen that cost money. There's delays to the production.
Survey. All that.
And altogether, all of these costs end up being 25% of the final cost of that home.
Wow.
Right? So these costs are flat, and then the small house gets hit hardest. So now it pushes them to build bigger houses to actually cover for the fact that they know that that 25% cost is going to be there.
Because they've got to make you pay for luxury, quote unquote, even though they're robbing you.
Well, it's not just that. It's the red tape. We've created red tape over a long period of time where we have all these regulations. And you know who's suffering the most from that? California. It is not practical to be able to build a house in California. We're about to show you why. Let's go ahead and play this clip that shows.
All right, now, in terms of home prices, zoning, and the worst housing shortage from the entire United States, let's talk about California. See, in many large California cities, a lot of the zoning requirement is dictated by parking. So if you want to go and build a brand new 600 square foot unit, you also have to supply an additional 300 square feet for that resident to park their car. If they wind up building that parking on ground level, that takes away from the space that they could be using just to build another unit. But if they go below ground, that costs a lot of money. So either way, that needs to be figured into the cost of the overall unit and eventually the price that you pay. This also isn't including all the other requirements like a minimum lot size, a minimum amount of open planted space, or a minimum amount of common space. And all of a sudden, building a 600 square foot apartment is now costing you the equivalent of building 1,100 square feet with everything else that you have to add onto it. And of course, they have to charge like you're buying or renting 1,100 square feet. You also have this completely backwards permit system that creates indefinite delays, where to run plumbing, you have to get a permit for that. But before you could get that permit, you have to go to a different department to get a permit to dig a trench. But to get that permit, you have to go to a different department to be able to start the work after an environmental review. Oh, and you also risk getting denied for a permit at every single step, at which point you have to resubmit and start over again from the back of the line. Even for me, I spent over $200,000 building out a 720 square foot unit. I paid over $10,000 in city fees and permit filings. But then they charged me another $20,000 to fix a sewer line, which required me to go and get a permit from Urban Forestry to trim the city-owned tree roots. But the tree turned out to be diseased, so I had to get another permit to be able to remove the tree, and another permit to be able to replace that tree with another tree. You can't even make this up. Getting these permits, by the way, could take hours, days, weeks, months. You have no idea. They could be denied at any point where you have to start the process over again.
You see, do we see the equation? When I talk about this deep dive and as I'm giving it, I'm just giving you guys facts impartially. I'm not skewing you to one way or another. I'm just telling you the reality of the situation because it is just easy to pin it as, well, it's just this one problem. It's a multitude. So
it's rot.
Yes.
It's total rot. And this is how empires fall. It's very Roman. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
And red tape and regulation, it always starts off as good intentions at the beginning.
Right.
But then they get carried away. They forget why they make the rules. They add another rule on top of another rule. And then pretty soon the system gets clogged. And then you're spending all of this money just to build a basic house. Okay, and then we're paying for that on the final price tag, and that's also why you're seeing prices, because houses get a comparison. A house that's built in a neighborhood gets priced comparatively to the houses in the surrounding. So if all those houses are being improved or they're brand new, that means your house also is starting to get raised higher and higher and higher. You can't just have one house that's in the neighborhood that's $1 million and then everything else is $100,000.
And that's like like the water level for the people, and we're just trying to like not drown. We're trying to stay above water, and they just keep pouring more water and more concrete in the pool, and they're like, swim, swim, swim. The economy's great. Everything's wonderful. Well, how are we supposed to actually address these problems and get real solutions if we're not acknowledging that the problem is happening?
Yes.
And Trump comes out and says, well, it's good that house prices are up because my constituents, the older people, they're happy about the value of their property.
Hey. All you got to do is get a 50-year mortgage. That's the solution.
Doubt 50,000 stock market. That's the solution.
Going to debt for 50 years. That was the solution.
1,000-year mortgage. Why can't your great, great, great grandchildren help you buy your home? Oh, we want the 1,000-year mortgage right now.
Yes. So the solution is very simple. This is one of the things. Let's deregulate some of these areas so we can build. The last thing I'm going to cover, and I'm going to cover this very quickly. Okay. It's actually, we stopped building enough housing. So let's pull up number 7 very quickly and look at U.S. construction starts. These have dropped off dramatically. Houses rise. The prices rise. Supply is supposed to follow, but it didn't. After 2008, the home building collapsed and entry-level construction never recovered. So right. Population kept growing and the supply is not meeting it. You're seeing that we're not building enough homes to actually keep up with all of that demand. And that is a true supply and demand issue.
Yeah, and they're locking themselves out by building these luxury places that no one's going to be able to afford. What happens is the depression comes in and we see a whole new market.
Yes, and then COVID happened. COVID made the situation even worse. And then now you're in a situation where they're not able to build enough houses. And also, it is more profitable for them to build luxury apartments because they're not making any money on these new construction houses, which we could be doing if we incentivize the construction.
They want to put you in a condominium prison for the rest of your life. You're going to pay for everything there. You get your DoorDash there, get your little snacks and goodies, your Walgreens, and you don't leave the mile within the complex. That's what they want. That's what a 15-minute city is.
Yeah, forget about the backyard. What do you need? You need the elevator to get you up and down.
That's right. And when you use the elevator, you're using the evil energy because you're an evil human. You have to pay your carbon credits every time you do it. And hey, use your key card. We'll get rid of keys. You don't need a key to your house. Give you a key card. Use the key card that uses power too, even if it's just a cent a day. Like, don't you want to pay to make the planet better?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Hey, we're going to be back with the deep dive here in a moment. We've got a little bit more left to cover. But again, there are a bunch of factors that are coming into play here, and I'm covering them all for you.
Yes,
you're gonna want to stay tuned. It gets even better. Okay, we will be back after the break. Thank you for staying tuned.
Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.